everybody. It is Dr. Joe Camerata with Across the Continuum here, and I wanted to get into form, basically technique, and how we should be thinking about this sort of category of movement against the background of barriers, against the background of development over time, skill acquisition, basically just like how should we go about thinking about form, and then like how can we utilize the things that we learn when it comes to skill development towards not creating barriers in front of folks that are under our care. So there's a few different camps when it comes to thinking about form. There's a camp that we need to make sure that form is a staple of movement, that we are paying very close attention to form, that things are basically meeting a certain criteria or falling into a certain category so that, you know, whatever, we are not injuring ourselves, we're not opening ourselves up to risk of injury, we're doing things optimized, so to say. And then I suppose another camp is the one where you kind of just will develop as things go, or it doesn't necessarily matter form-wise when it comes to injury and pain and symptoms and things like that. And I feel like this topic has a good bit of nuance in it, although I do feel like I've drawn a line in the sand in a couple of places. And so when it comes to form, let's just talk about skill. So in the world of strength training, I would consider skill of the utmost importance when it comes to thinking about how we are going to develop going forward. So when we expose somebody to something that is novel, they're not very good at it. Honestly, they might be good at it, but they're not as good at it as they will be once they have something like repeated exposures over time. And so when we have somebody that's brand new to something, they're not going to be as good as they will be simply because they have no skill in those things, whether that is skill in managing weight on the bar, or skill in getting into a certain position, or skill in managing power export, or, you know, work, or whatever you want to call it, physicists out there. But skill is going to be the thing that is going to determine basically how well they're able to accomplish tasks. So let's take, swinging a baseball bat, for example. The first time that anybody swings a baseball bat or a golf club or what have you, they're just not going to be able to understand how to organize their body around that piece of equipment. And you know, we see this with any sort of new exercise and new equipment in the gym as well. But there's just not going to be that understanding. There's not going to be that motor pathway, that complex motor system that is going to be able to categorize and organize this person's body around that piece of equipment to accomplish the task at hand. The cool thing is that if we're talking about skill acquisition and the development of skill is something that we can pretty reliably understand to improve over time as we expose people to similar tasks and request them to do them in a similar fashion. And so one of the reasons that we can't really rush things in the gym, or, maybe not just in the gym, but like physical endeavors, and it really doesn't have to be just limited to the physical, but the reason that we can't really force things is because the skill acquisition is going to happen at the pace that it's going to happen. And as new coaches, one thing that I want you to understand is if you try and force skill acquisition to happen, now there can be cueing and there can be drills and there can be, you know, affordances and stuff like that that we put in their way to create a certain movement. But if we try and force skill, we're only going to frustrate both parties that are kind of participating in this thing, right? The coach is going to say, why aren't you getting this sooner? Or we've been doing this drill for X amount of months. It's not really hitting. What's going on? And the athlete is going to be like, you're giving me the wrong cues, or we're not working hard enough, or you're holding things back from me. And I've experienced all of this, you know, in my athlete coaching career. And so when it comes to trying to force skill acquisition to happen, we really have to understand that it's really just going to happen when it's going to happen. And you hear this very frequently along the athlete continuum, is that sometimes things just click, sometimes they just work better. And that click affords this person a new way to look at a complex motor problem. And that problem or that solution to that complex motor problem may look like a new skill or a new way to organize himself around a movement, a task, a piece of equipment. But those, like clicking, it's kind of hit or miss depending on like the context of the situation, as all things, right? And so sometimes a cue might not land with somebody the right way. Their brain just doesn't interpret it the way that you think it might, or somebody might interpret one cue different than another person, or, you know, they slept really good last night and they solved that problem in their dreams and now they come in and things are all hunky-dory. But I think the overarching idea is that the skill is going to come when it comes, and trying to inch positively and closer every day is a good thing to try and accomplish. But as you get more into coaching, as you get more into managing athletes, whether those are patients or clients or what have you, you really need to take a step back. And when you do take a step back, you see that things aren't going to move as quickly as you think they are. They're not going to move the way that you want to. I mean, I have plenty of athletes that I've been working with for months to years that just aren't hitting the mark that we had hoped they would when we implemented a new drill, when we implemented a new block, a new macro cycle, what have you. And we just have to be okay with that. And so if we're thinking about skill and form and technique, it's going to develop how it's going to develop based on the context and what you're presenting to that person and what they're bringing to the table. So I think that's definitely the first thing that I wanted to talk about. And the other thing is that if we try to put too much attention on the skill, we're almost missing the forest for the trees, right? So it's totally fine to have a goal and to have a direction that we're marching towards with our athletes, with our patients, and with our clients. But when we start to degrade the intensity of the training, or we start to degrade the volume or the frequency of the training for an attempt at creating a scenario where the movements are perfect, or, you know, perfect depending on what the coach defines it as or what the athlete defines it as, then we start to detract from the training itself, right? And so the thing to keep in mind is that if we're putting a little bit too much focus on form and technique, not knowing that we're doing this person a disservice, then we're going to be taking away from the thing that we're trying to accomplish, which is like pushing towards health, so to speak. Now, these athletes might not be pushing towards health. They might be pushing towards a certain technique goal. But the thing that we want to remember is that if we're focusing too much, if we're, you know, saying, oh, there's too much weight on the bar, the intensity is too high, the form is breaking down, and so we need to pull back, the only thing that we're really doing is pulling back on the training adaptations that are going to happen with this athlete. Now, that's not to say that if we max out, you know, intensity, that everything's going to work out great. But it also kind of opens us up to this fault where I call it the do not pass go, where if somebody doesn't hit a certain form or certain technique, then the coach is going to say, okay, well, until you hit this technique, you can't go any further. You can't pass go. And what that does is it's just going to kind of delay training, right? They might get better at the context that you're giving, which is very light load or very high or low volume exposures. But as a whole, the big picture, all the puzzle pieces aren't going to be put in place if we're just focusing so narrowly on one single movement in one single context, whether that be at a single weight or, you know, a single intensity, what have you. That kind of leads us into the next conversation of where does novelty of movement and where does variation of movement fit into this skill acquisition process? Now, I had mentioned previously that skill is kind of everything when it comes to strength training, when it comes to sports adaptations, when it comes to like performing, so to speak. And so once we start to see new people in our gym or new people on our roster or in our clinic, we want to expose them to a whole bunch of things. And basically what that's going to do is that's going to create a large movement library or a lot of skills that people can pull from. Now, with anything, there is going to be a spectrum of, you know, what is reasonable and what is not reasonable when it comes to how many things we're exposing them to, right? We start to fall into like the CrossFit gym box programming, and I put programming in air quotes because it's just random stuff that we're doing all the time. There's not really any room for folks to get better in skill acquisition in that when things are all random. But I do like the CrossFit realm because there is a very wide range of movements that are incorporated into the programming itself. And if we do have structured programming where there's 8 weeks, there's 10 weeks, there's 12 weeks of repetitive exposures or repeated exposures to certain skills or to certain movements, then that can be a very helpful and productive place for new people to be, for maybe not even new intermediate people or new people to certain stimuli or movements that can help to benefit their movement library altogether. Now, along the same lines as do not pass and go, or, you know, not being able to advance in movement, we have like this idea in musculoskeletal health that if things aren't looking perfect, then we can't discharge people, or that it's innately connected to symptoms or pain, right? So I think like scapular dyskinesis is a good one, or knee valgus is a good one, or maybe even dissociating your lumbar spine or whatever the heck that is. But movement coming from one place when it's, quote unquote, supposed to be coming from another. But the idea is that we're, as a coach, as a clinician, we have an idea, a picture of what movement should look like in our heads. We're communicating that to the person, and we're saying that because it does not look like what I want it to look like, or what a textbook says it should look like, or what me and my buddies think that it should look like in the group chat, then that's why you're having symptoms, pain, injury, what have you. And so if you were to just move this way, then that would be much better. You would avoid all of these things. And so the problem with this idea, and the reason that I'm on here talking about skill acquisition and movement development, is that we know that, and I say we, the collective we, papers that I've read, know that there is a wide variation, even at the highest, most elite levels of sport performance when confronted with similar or the same task. So people are going to organize themselves around the same task very differently each exposure, right? No movement pattern is going to look exactly the same each time you do it. Now, we throw into consideration that there's going to be changes in context with sports, whether that's powerlifting, whether that's baseball, whether that's rowing, what have you. There's going to be changes in context, whether that's more, you know, wind blowing in this direction, or, you know, the person didn't sleep too well last night in that direction, or there's more weight on the bar here. That's going to change the context. And so there's going to need to be that variation of the movement as we're going forward. And so, again, having like this wide library of movements in the patient's head, and, well, not in their head, in their body, in their, not mind-body dualism, but in themselves, is good for being able to solve a wide array of movement issues, right? We can go back to the baseball example. If somebody's going to throw a curveball or a knuckleball, or a ball that's going to move differently and you have to adjust the swing in real time, then that is going to be something that's going to have to alter the movement pattern and variation while it's happening. Which brings me to another great point, is the idea that we can control the movement as it happens in a very quick period of time, right? If we're hoping that the body is almost going to take over, and again, I hit this mind-body dualism, but if we're assuming that you are just going to kind of take over, you know, let Jesus take the wheel while you're doing a certain movement, then we have to assume that you can't really think too hard about the form while you're doing it. You just kind of have to let it happen. And so the idea that we can cue people and say, think about this cue while you're doing this one rep max, or, you know, think about all the training that we've done, it gets a little fuzzy, because the moment that we start to pull people out of that automatic response to a certain stimulus or in front of a certain stressor, then we start to bring them, quote unquote, out of their heads or into their heads, and things start to degrade a little bit. I think the paper that I've read before is when they ask pitchers to think about throwing a little bit harder at their elbow, or internally rotating a little bit more, their throws get all weird. And it's almost like the sum of the part, or the, what is it? The sum is greater than the parts, right? So like the entire movement itself happening as one movement is greater than all of the parts put together. But again, the idea is that we can't assume that technique is going to have to be perfect, right? We could have a whole conversation about what perfect means, but we can't assume that the technique is going to have to be perfect, because not only is it not going to be perfect because the context is going to change? Not only does it not have to be perfect because there's no perfect movements, but we need it to change, and we can't ask our athletes or our clients or ourselves to do a very specific movement in a very specific context because things happen so very quickly. And, you know, we get a lot of folks who are like, oh, well, does that mean that, you know, nothing matters? And it's like, well, no, what a straw man argument, right? We build the straw man so it's easier to blow it down, which is kind of like a sidestepping of the argument at hand. But there's just like a range of movements that are quote unquote acceptable for certain tasks. And there are a whole, you know, what is there, 8 billion people? Like they're going to accomplish these tasks 8 billion ways. And so there has to be a range of movements and ways that we can complete this task and it be completed to the same performance throughout all of these tasks, because there's not just one perfect way to do things. Those are my ideas on skills. Lighten up on the technique a little bit. Just see how things develop over time. Continually expose your athletes and your patients to novel movements, to things that might help to push the needle forward. But if we put too much pressure on them to get it done right now or in a certain amount of time, we're setting ourselves up for heartache, for failure, and for expectations that really aren't going to be met. If you have any questions, go ahead and DM me. CrossContinuum.com, IG, was it CrossContinuum? I'm on X as well, but I'm not really on that very well. But reach out to me if you have any questions about form. Yeah, have a great day.